This is Mark Colombo from Free Reign, and I give you the right to rock.
The right to rock.
Texas, you're listening to the Right to Rock podcast, the only heavy metal and hard rock show on the net made by fans for fans. And now get ready for two guys who are so metal, they rust when they sweat. It's Genghis and Ragman.
It's fucking funny. You
Sweet.
Made me watch that again.
You probably think we're watching The Young Ones, but
like
we're not.
Was it The Young Ones or was that in Bad News? It was
Young
The Young Ones, wasn't it?
Young That's Ones, right. yes.
It was that TV show they had on the telly.
The telly. You got video.
With the fucking telly inspector.
Was that Alexi?
No, that dude who came by to the house looking to find the television, because they had, apparently you're not supposed to be running the television or something. Right now. So he goes by and they're like, hide the TV, and fucking Vivian eats it. He's got the cord sticking out of his mouth, like, I don't know what you're talking about.
Well, what you were hearing before you got to hear our great voices, listening pleasure of Genghis and Ragman, we were jamming out to a little bit of the new one from The Haunted. It's the title track off the brand new record, Unseen. That was, say it with me, kids, Unseen.
Unseen, is that?
Cool. For you Haunted fans, though, I wonder how people are gonna, you know, dig this record.
Supposed to be like super melodic or something.
Yeah, and it's melodic. It's not as heavy. I mean, there's heavy tracks on it.
Sure.
But the band's kind of, I don't know if they've gone for more commercial or it's just they were shooting for that or it's just what come out. You don't know.
Who knows? Again, I guess yeah. I mean, we're not gonna go into it, but we always say every band's got a right to do whatever they want,
right.
And I guess I wonder, what I really ever wonder is when a band changes their sound, and it's not that significant a change, right?
Yeah.
But even whenever they change the sound, is it? I always wonder, is it more the band that decided it as a band, or maybe just some person in the band, and they follow that person, or is it like a producer that says, no, you guys need to sound like this, which I thought is kind of against the producer's code, right?
Well,
and the producer's supposed to just make the band sound the best they can with the shit they write?
Right. But I think the producer has a lot of influence on what a band does.
Definitely, yeah.
Especially if you get... And I'll tell you what, real quick, who we're watching here is In Flames, and this is a classic example of a band that was a melodic death metal band. Mm-hmm. That turned into kind of a new metal band, but then they went back to kind of the older sound on the last couple of records.
And the Hopefully. Agent of that change was
the producers. Yeah. I think so. I think they wanted to make it more in the mainstream.
Because that's where we're going to make more money.
Yeah, exactly.
And we're not doing this to make no money, right?
True.
So it's like, I guess that makes sense.
Well, what we're watching a video that came out here a while back, a few years ago. This is In Flames, Used and Abused. In Live We Trust. And right now we're watching the portion from the Hammersmith show.
Nice.
And I think this was off the soundtrack to your Escape tour or something like that.
Something like that, yeah.
Which kind of sucked because the band stopped doing less of the old stuff and was mainly concentrating on this newer sound they were doing. Still heavy, but kind of had more of a, to my opinion, more of a new metal sound, which sucked because you took away the guitar solos, and they were one of the bands doing guitar solos when there were no guitar solos.
And put it this way, the best thing about In Flames at their height was not their new metal sound.
Right, exactly.
the things that you think of as new metal, that's not what they were doing, and they were fucking huge, or at least were really popular when everyone else was doing new metal.
Yeah.
I think they were trying
to go for kind of a Cornish sound, but still staying somewhat heavy. I mean, they didn't totally abandon the death metal roots, but...
I don't think you can. I think if you came out of that, just kind of like most bands that are like a lot of those Danish and Denmark and Finnish bands, you know, all those Scandinavian bands sound very, you know, variations of melodic death metal kind of a sound, right?
Sure.
Like Children of Bodom or something. I don't know that they can help it. That's just, I think it's the sound that's going on in that area of the world.
When In Flames came out, you had this new wave of Swedish death metal.
There you go, Swedish, that's what I'm thinking of.
And so they come out with a sound that was kind of perfected by bands like Dark Tranquillity. They took it to another level and actually got to a bigger, another level. When they did experiment going a little bit more commercial, but then they went over the edge and just said, okay, we're going to do everything like this. They didn't say, okay, let's do a couple songs like this,
or
keep our core sound.
Take some of those elements you know, from nu metal that we think makes it popular for whatever it is and kind of try to incorporate it into what we did.
True.
Right.
Well, I'll tell you what, we're both parched.
Totally.
So let's get the beer open. But first off, we will play you some In Flames off A Sense of Purpose. This is the track, Sleepless Train. We don't have the traditional cork, so I know people get very upset when I don't do Jerry Butler, but that might come later. But I'm getting the beer glass ready here.
Yeah, the fact of the matter is, I'm parched
like a motherfucker.
Yeah, because
I mean, it hasn't been, it ain't summer yet, but it's starting to get a little warm down here in the south, and we're having a
humid
drought.
Humid is a motherfucker.
And we're having a drought. Like, well, finally, we might be getting some rain. But we haven't had rain in a while. We were having a serious drought. Nice. Uh-oh. Jerry's on.
Okay. Sound effects.
Nice sound effects.
All right. So, the Coney Island Lager. Here, Genghis, I'll give you first honorary pour. It's been a while since Genghis and Ragman have gotten together for a show and a beer.
We
had some stuff in the can over there.
Over there.
Oh, wow. That's different than I thought it was going to be. Being a lager, that's a little bit darker. It's almost like an amber.
Yeah. Interesting. But, the monkey lamp will tell the tale.
Yeah.
Ah, monkey lamp. He knows all.
Oh, precious.
He would never lie to us, Holmes.
He would not. All right. Paisan, let's click.
Shall we? Clink.
Ooh, it's bitter.
A little bitter, but not bad. Not bad at all.
Not bad.
No,
it's
complaints
got a nice
over
flavor.
Here. Let's top that off a bit.
You better top that shut off, B.
Wrap that gavel up, B. So, I mean, what do you think? So, what are your initial impressions so far?
Okay, what are we drinking first?
Well, this is the Coney Island Lager, I'll have you know. And, this, obviously, as one would expect, is probably comes from a brewery up north, the Schmaltz Brewing Company. They're the ringleaders.
Schmaltz be with you.
Exactly, Holmes. They're the ringleaders of Hebrew beer. Well, I guess that makes sense, right? So these dudes are, you can find them at ConeyIsland.com. No, the proceeds from the sale of this beer go to help Coney Island. That's interesting.
Oh, that's cool.
They must be having a thing like a little fundraising kind of a deal.
Yeah, the label of the beer's got a classic Coney Island style,
like a little carnival kind of look to it, or something.
Vaudeville looking thing, or maybe not vaudeville, but it looks like something you'd see going into a funhouse or something.
Of hip.
You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, it's got that classic kind of pardon me. Sorry, had me get on my sleep lately, Holmes. But it's got like your traditional kind of a sideshow kind of painting sort of face on it, like a big clown, and it's
You think I'm a clown?
Funny to you. No, but they're from obviously a New York style company here that's making this stuff, and they're trying to help out the Coney Island area. It's
forget about it.
It's been likened to like one of those Brooklyn lagers, and we're not big fans of the Brooklyn beers. No. We'll have to admit
it's better than that, though.
But this tastes better. Yeah,
yeah,
so
it's nice.
I don't mean it to sound bad.
It's a little bitter though. It's almost, to me, it's a lager, but it's almost got an English style flavor to it. It's almost like an English beer to me. Like
for one thing, it's very carbonated. It's got a nice lively sort of.
Which is uncharacteristic of most English UK beers.
True, you're right. And also it's got, like that beautiful kind of, amberish, tawny kind of color going to it, which is real nice.
It's got a nice little aroma over there.
Mm-hmm. It's got a nice mix of the, it's not too, it's a little hoppy. But
it goes away.
But there's also some nice maltiness to it,
and the bitterness
too.
Starts to fade as you go. It gets kind of fruity a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
You taste the fruitiness?
Yeah, I do. So far, I'm digging this. The more I drink it, the more I'm liking it, which is nice.
That's a good sign.
That's a good beer to have, is the ones that,
the
more you drink them, the better
they get.
You know the
beers that scare me is when you drink them, and they taste great at first, and as you keep drinking them, they start tasting like shit. You know what I mean?
Well, they get worse as you drink them?
Yeah,
that's not good.
It's like,
what happened? The more you drink it, like the harsher, the more medicine-y it tastes.
Yeah.
I don't like those medicine-y beers.
No,
those are shitty.
It's like Alka-Chose.
Yeah, like it's like, dude, am I drinking Listerine or something? That's what it tastes like.
Well, it's better than that German beer, the Smokehouse ale we had.
Oh, that one Rauch beer we had, a while back. That thing, it was just too fucking smoky.
It's like drinking the gravy out of a brisket that had been...
Oh, not even that, dude. It's like you were cleaning out your grill. So you just went up to the grill, all the charcoal and ash in there, and filled it full of water and just, I'm going to throw a straw in that. I mean, it was smoky and a motherfucker. But anyway, actually, it turns out the Schmaltz Brewing Company is from California. But like I said, these guys, which I'm surprised by.
That's interesting.
But, they went for your classic sort of amber sort of beer. It's definitely an amber-style beer, even though they call it a lager, so more like maybe a red lager.
Mm-hmm.
But, so far, let's put it to the test. Let's give the rating and see. I'm actually pretty happy with this so far. What do you think on drinkability?
Drinkability?
Yeah.
Very, very smooth.
Maybe a 3?
Yeah, I'd definitely give it a 3 to 3.5.
Alright, we'll go for a three, an easy three. Alcohol, I'm trying to look for the what we're looking at. I love the song. Trying to look and see if I see the content on here. Nope, not seeing it. They ain't helping us, Holmes. So that's cool. It doesn't taste too strong. It doesn't taste like it's some sort of, it's not like a 10
or something.
I would say
probably a 5.5 to 6 maybe.
Yeah, maybe a 6 is what I'm guessing.
Yeah.
And that's cool. I mean, so maybe like a, you know, 2.5.
Mm-hmm.
So we're going to give that a 2.5 on the alcohol. And then finally for taste, what do you think?
I'll give it a 3. 3.5. Something like that.
I'm hip to that.
The more I drink it, the more I liked it. Initially, it was a little too bitter.
Mm-hmm.
Because I got to be in the mood for bitter beer.
Yeah, I know what you mean. It's not like if it's bitter at all, I can't drink it, period. I mean, if it's got some good flavor and it just happens to have that bitterness, a little hoppiness to it,
yeah,
that's not so bad.
Why? I get on kicks where I just drink a bunch of English beer.
Up hip?
And then there's other times I just want Belgian. Belgian's kind of become my favorite beer.
Yeah, for me, definitely. I'm all about a Belgian beer.
I can do a Belgian about any time.
Yeah, a nice Trappist ale or something.
But you know what? I think over the last year or so, I've been a little bit more open to microbrews, U.S. microbrews, too.
Oh, nice.
So.
Yeah, we missed the beer festival, didn't we?
Yeah, we did.
It came and went. I've had a lot of shit going on lately at work and stuff like that. So, you know, it happens.
Ditto.
Although, you know, I'll tell you what. Monday, Primus is going to be playing at the Verizon Wireless.
Doing it?
You know, I'm thinking about it.
Who's playing with them?
I haven't even bothered to look that up. I just saw Primus May 23rd, and I'm like, gosh, I might have to check them out. It's right across the street from where I work, so I was like, why the fuck not?
I heard a rumor.
Uh-huh.
It was John Acoustic.
Doing his Acoustica.
Yeah.
Aerosmith set.
Yeah. I don't know what the hell's going on with that, but I
think it's clear that he's been kicked out of the band.
I think so, too.
Hasn't had the balls to call us and tell us he wants his job back.
Right. But kind of interesting, because I saw some pictures with Tyler where they were doing a gig in, like South America or something like that.
Uh-huh.
I didn't see John. But I don't know.
What are you going to do?
I did get something weird from him about 2 weeks ago, though.
Uh-huh. What's that?
He sent a picture of Aerosmith with his face cut out and put over Steven Tyler's body.
Wow.
So
what's that about?
I don't know. It didn't make a lot of sense.
Is he getting like kind of a single white female thing where he's like trying to become Steven Tyler, or what's his name?
I don't know. It was weird because there was no text. It was just that picture.
Like, this says it all.
Yeah.
Picture's worth a
it's
thousand.
Like, believe me or go fuck yourself.
I don't know, dude. I think he's gone a little off the deep end. I mean, it'll be interesting to see what his mood's like when he eventually ends up coming back with his tail between his legs.
Well, since John's not here tonight, we do have a guest mixer in the house. It's kind of weird. We seem to get all the people in trouble in the media. Mr. Arnold Schwarzenegger, give it up, people.
Thank you.
Arnold, how are you?
I'm very good to be here.
Why would you want to be a sound man for the RightToRock.com?
You know, it's a very interesting question that you asked me, Mr. Ragman. First of all,
that's good.
First of all, what kind of name is Ragman? It's kind of weird.
Well, it's it's French Romania.
It's a Comanche Indian. I thought you could do a Fletch.
I had to pull up the Fletch.
No, it is a little weird. I mean, I thought maybe you were doing a little, you know, having to do a little, you know, duck and cover, a little PR because of your recent, you know, news problem you've been having, right?
Well, it's very true. I've been having a little problem with, I don't want to go into it, but it's all going to shake out.
Who's the little boy with you? Is that your boy from the maid?
Well, I don't want to talk about him. He's a little scared to come out in front of, you know, all the people here, all five of them.
You don't have to get personal, Arnold. We're doing our best.
Hey, and we have a close set because we do a big Star Wars coming in.
Yes, of course, I understand. I mean, maybe I can make some of my contacts in California and have them come down here and maybe rework the place. I can have Wolfgang Puck down here like that.
Oh, sweet. That would be... Well, Turtlehead would get a little bit jealous, maybe.
He might be, dude. Especially, I mean, Wolfgang, he just makes pizza basically all he ever makes anymore, right?
Yeah. As far as I know.
Have you know his pizza is like the best you've ever had?
Cool. Well, Arnold, thanks for coming down. Let's see how you do the boards tonight.
That's no problem. I'm going to take care of you. Don't even worry about it.
Oh, wow. You got a grip on you.
He does, dude. I mean, it's a little low. It's kind of scary, but I mean, maybe if you...
Well, he kind of grabbed for my crotch and I know, my leg in time.
That's the freaky thing. It's probably just force of habit.
I guess. I don't think he cares. I don't know.
At this point, yeah, he's just Mr. Grabass. I mean, it's clearly, he's all about the grabass.
Well, sweet. So that's the guest mixer. Let's see how he does.
Good luck up there, Arnie.
We've had a lot of people.
Wow.
Begging for this job.
We have. Ever since, once they found out Sheen was here, the last time. Everybody, the floodgates open.
Oh, and there's been overwhelming response on Charlie and Justin, even. The two of them, they like the tandem. They like that.
Interestingly, I've not seen Justin since that incident.
I haven't either.
I don't know what happened.
Maybe. I sometimes hear this, like, whimpering. Mm-hmm. Kind of, it's coming from somewhere in the studio, it's but
kind
I don't
of
know
a,
where.
Yeah, it's kind of a mix of laughter, of satisfied laughter, and crying. It's kind of bad.
It's kind of odd. Weird.
It's like you kind of get excited, but you're also depressed at the same time about it. Yes, like, this is terrible, but it's funny. So what do we have for a topic?
Well, I'll tell you what. I picked up the latest issue of Classic Rock Magazine. Uh-huh. And it had a pretty interesting title. It's got Perry, guess what? Joe Perry and Steven Tyler on the cover.
Like a classic old picture of them together.
And it's discussing songwriters.
The 100 greatest songwriters, huh?
Yeah, yeah. In my copy, if you open it up, there's a Sharpie that had been taken to the picture of Perry and Tyler.
Yeah, what the fuck happened there? Yeah,
and a stick figure drawn in with J-O-N next to it.
That's pretty bizarre.
So, I think John got a hold of it. I don't know how.
And even misspelled his own name, which is kind of fucked up.
Yeah, weird. But anyway, to get off that, not to give him too much more pub here.
Yeah,
because the prick won't even come on our show right now. I think he's, again, scared. But
who knows? He's probably on a bender somewhere.
But anyway, let's talk about some of the better songwriters in metal is what I was kind of thinking tonight. Some of the better duos out there. Some of them you don't know with the way the writing credits were, but if you think right now, you think, don't even put it to metal. Lennon McCartney.
No one beats the obvious.
Richards and Jagger.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Perry and
Tyler.
Tyler, yeah.
Sure.
Angus Young, Bon Scott.
True.
Phil Lynott. I don't know if he was really in a writing tandem, though.
Right. I mean, he wrote most of the stuff for Thin Lizzy, right?
Yeah.
I mean, he didn't do a lot of... Not that he didn't want to share the duties. I think he just was so impassioned about the band that he started that he just, you know, just wrote music. He was a songwriting kind of dude anyway, right?
Oh, yeah. He was like a poet and he didn't know it all.
Exactly. But then you've got, you know... Even some of the more modern, you know, guys like Zenuff and V, right?
Yeah, Chip and Donnie.
Yeah, we've talked about it before how, you know, in fact, we told them to their face, you know, at least Chip. We said, you know, we think of you guys as like a modern kind of...
modern-day Beatles.
Lennon and McCartney kind of team. In that, I mean, you guys write real melodic stuff. It's all great. You know, it's not to say they've never had a bad song, but I mean, when you consider just... How they just seem to, I don't know, they just gel really nicely. And I guess that's kind of the cool thing about your classic songwriting teams. Interesting, too, that it's usually two people. But the songwriting teams, it's like they have this easy sort of, they get together and it's just before you know it, man, they're knocking shit out. And it's just, it's great stuff.
Right.
Then you got other bands who, you know, you can have one guy writing it, the whole band writing it, and they'll put out...
writers.
Yeah, or they'll put out album after album of songs, and they're okay, but it's like they just never... What they wouldn't give for just one really great-sounding song, one classic-sounding song, like something Chip and Donnie have written or something Lennon and McCartney have written, you know?
Right.
Those dudes, it's like they would sit down back in their heyday, Lennon and McCartney, and, you know, over lunch, write a song that we're still singing 30 years, 40 years later.
Oh, yeah.
You know, it's in our heads. It's just part of our consciousness.
Well,
how fucking awesome.
I think where we should start is with some of the classics. The guys that started first. Mm-hmm. Page Plant.
Mm-hmm. Definitely Zeppelin. One of the biggest duos ever.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. And have we ever played Zeppelin on the show?
I think we have on very rare occasions. We don't do it often.
You want to play some Zeppelin?
Sure.
What do you want to play?
Well, you know, one of my favorites is Since I've Been Loving You.
Let's do it. Zeppelin for you. We're going to get classic, but we are going to hit some newer stuff tonight too, so don't get scared, you newbies. You got to learn where this shit came from. That's what we try to do. We try to educate.
Yeah, like we've talked about it before, you know, we play a lot of older stuff, but part of that is because it's like part of musical education.
Right.
You know, in order to for y'all to understand why we feel the way we feel about music and where did it start.
Right.
It's not like we just fell out of the crib and start listening to whatever's in the top 40.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you got to find out somewhere. And these guys are the guys that laid the foundation.
Yeah, and we're talking about guys that, you know, sustained careers by writing great music, not two guys that wrote one good song and the rest of the stuff that they wrote was shit. You know, we're talking about some of the greatest songwriting teams in hard rock, heavy metal history.
And part of how you know they're some of the greatest, one, you could say just sheer album sales, but part of it too is it's easy, like this idiot Lady Gaga, right? It's easy for her songs to be top of the charts now.
Right.
But are people going to be wanting to hear their songs, wanting to be go to concerts, want to be doing all that shit 30 years from now? No, 40 years from now. I mean, we go to, like, if I find out Iron Maiden's coming, I'm like, okay, if they're anywhere near town, I'm probably going to go.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's not like they're doing all that new stuff, like, oh, I haven't heard that song before. I mean, most of this, 90% of the material is going to be shit I've already heard before. But you go because their songs are so fucking good and they put on such a great show that 40 years later, you're still rocking to it.
But you know what's interesting about Maiden? Mm-hmm. The primary songwriter for those guys in the early days was Steve Harris.
Right, bass player.
And some of the greatest songs they ever wrote. Well, I guess maybe they were driven by Harris.
Oh, yeah. Because they all start with a great bass line for the most part. Yeah. Like The Trooper is a classic.
Oh, exactly. Exactly. But, you know, you got Harris writing, and then you had Adrian Smith and Murray. Right. So I guess maybe you could say Harris, Murray, and then Dick. When Dickinson got in the mix, then he started writing with Steve. Mm-hmm. But I think Steve was the driving force behind that band.
I think he's always been, kind of the glue that holds everything together. I mean, if you lost Steve or something out of Iron Maiden, I think it'd be, I don't know what
we could do it.
It might probably be the end of Iron Maiden. I think if they were smart, they'd say, all right, fair enough, then we're done. We had a good run.
let's play some classic Maiden.
Sure.
Off the Killers record. Mm-hmm. Let's play the title track, Killers. An interesting band in that your bass player was your primary songwriter, even though other
true,
guys
yeah.
did write with him.
Right.
Steve, I think, was involved in about every song.
Oh, yeah.
Especially the bigger songs. And, one of your points was, how do you recognize a great songwriting team? I think it's longevity of the band as well.
It certainly gives you a great indicator, yeah. If they're still around, still making, and the music still sounds good when you hear it, then it's like, well, something obviously is going on. They haven't changed the personnel that much, and yet they're still making good music. So clearly these guys are doing something right.
Right, exactly. Well, you're wearing a Motorhead shirt tonight. Lemmy, I think he's probably the primary songwriter of Motorhead.
Most likely, yeah.
He writes with other guys.
And their music always sounds great.
Oh, yeah. It doesn't change, though.
Yeah.
It's like AC/DC.
Yeah, and that's the thing. Not to put them down, but you're right. They really don't change on that. But the thing is, too, they turn in a dependable album. When do you ever hear a Motorhead album go, oh, that album really sucked ass, and you just don't even want anything to do with it? Mm-hmm. There's always some great songs on a Motorhead album. And
right.
And if the band hasn't changed all that much in terms of who's the primary songwriter, then I think we know what's going on there.
And the great thing about Motorhead, what they've been doing it 30-something years,
mm-hmm.
and they just came out back in 2010 with probably the strongest record they've done in at least 10 years.
Oh, yeah.
Great new record. And we played a bunch of tracks off that, so, but we're going to keep going here with
an interesting, we know a lot of the great classic matchups. We can go through the list here. They've got, for instance, Ozzy Osbourne, but
Sabbath. If you think about Sabbath, let's pick a band like Sabbath.
Uh-huh. Did he really write the songs?
Well,
I know he was involved in the writing.
Well, I tell you what, there was a great DVD that came out here about a year ago.
Uh-huh.
It was a Black Sabbath, The Making of Paranoid. okay. where it interviewed everybody pretty much present day talking about the recording of that record.
Okay. Cool. And, those are always cool DVDs.
It's kind of interesting how, you know, Iommi would come up with the riff and then Ozzy would come up with the lyrics.
Right.
So they're writing a song together.
True, but I'm kind of like...
Then Geezer Butler would come in and refine the lyrics.
Ah, okay.
So I don't really know how involved Ozzy was in
the writing process. That's my point. And then when you hear, I mean, you heard what he said, and then I recognize maybe today's method is different than it was when he started, but at least recently, up until he lost, until he got rid of Zakk Wylde, you know, his very complaint was, all my stuff's starting to sound like Black Label Society. Well... Ozzy, that ain't because
you're not writing.
Yeah, but it's not because you're writing shit like Black Label Society, Ozzy. So if most of the music sounds like that, it must mean Zach's writing it. And yeah, it's easy to say, well, yeah, I wrote the lyrics. I was like, right, but you know, I could write the lyrics to an Ozzy song. You know, let's be honest, right? Or even a Van Halen song. You and I could, and I'm not even kidding. You and I literally could write the lyrics to those songs, like rewrite them, and no one would give a shit. They'd be like, okay, cool, Van Halen. Because they're not really listening to the lyrics. They're listening to Dave's voice singing and his antics on stage, and they're listening to Eddie's guitar.
I think the interesting thing about the Ozzy Zakk split is they both came out with the best records either party has done in years.
Because it usually happens when you have some sort of emotional turmoil, right?
Sure.
Some of the best music comes from that shit.
Right.
So, I mean, that's the thing. I'm not trying to do it to steal Ozzy's thunder. He's clearly a legend in the metal music scene. I mean, I understand that. I'm not saying he doesn't deserve to be considered that. I'm simply saying, you know, when you go say, this person wrote this, it's like, right, but how much did he really contribute?
Yeah.
And you know, the same may be true, I don't know all the details. When you talk about Lennon and McCartney, we know they were both talented motherfuckers.
But you don't know who wrote more of what.
So if you say, like, for instance, I think I know that Yesterday was written by McCartney, right? But if you look on there, I mean, does Lennon get any credit on that song at all? I mean, he might have, for all I know.
I don't know.
You know?
Or
even any of the songs where it was like, when you look at the credits and it says Lennon/McCartney. Okay, but... how much? I mean, did Lennon do the words and McCartney do the music, or vice versa? Or did Lennon write, you know, just the chorus and the words, and then, you know, McCartney wrote the rest? I mean, you don't know.
Yeah.
It just is Lennon McCartney. So, I don't know how to do all that.
They got in a room and then jammed, and you know, certain parts came out from each guy.
Right, and they were, you know, I'm sure at the time that being friends and everything, they weren't really worried about, oh, well, I want this credit for this, or no, you can have credit for that. You know, they just said, whatever, we were both in the room, Lennon McCartney.
Right.
You know, and I'm cool with that. I'm not trying to debate that. I'm simply saying, you know, when you say that. So, like, in these songwriting teams, you know, like, for instance, there's one here. There's Genesis, you know. So, who is it? Was it Peter Gabriel was responsible for the music at the time, or was it Phil Collins? Because I know after Peter Gabriel left, you know, the band took a slightly different sound. Not slightly, but a lot different.
Well, yeah, you went from a progressive sound to more of a pop sound.
Yeah. And then Alice Cooper, you know, I mean, didn't he... He co-wrote with a lot of people, right?
Yeah.
It's not like all of his stuff was just his.
Well, when Kane Roberts was in the band, that was his main songwriting partner. And then when he got to Trash, he wrote with a lot of different people.
Okay.
I think, like Desmond Child. We talked about that
tonight. That's what, I knew we were getting to him at some point because that dude has had his hand in a shitload of music.
Sure.
I think according to his page, it was like 70 top 40 hits. He's had a hand in writing.
Wow.
And won multiple Grammys, I think. And, I mean, he's worked with both Kane Roberts and Alice Cooper. He's also worked with Bon Jovi, of course.
Motley Crue, I think. Kiss.
I think he's worked with Motley Crue. But he's also worked with other motherfuckers like, what's his name? Ricky Martin. And I think Kelly Clarkson, I think. And people like that. And Shakira and all these other like pop music and other kinds of music. So he clearly is a pretty versatile dude.
Oh yeah.
He worked with Aerosmith. Apparently they wrote Angel, and they knocked that out literally in an hour and 45 minutes.
Are you kidding?
Is what I was reading. Yeah. So it's like they just sat down and said, hey, and things started flowing. And I think Steve was a part of that too. Because I don't think Steve necessarily isn't any bad at writing his own music. I have a feeling, you know, I mean, there's a definite stamp on Aerosmith songs. Part of it's going to be Joe Perry's songwriting, I think, his music, and Steve Perry's, you know, lyrical shit. But also, too, Steven Tyler is also
you know, I think he writes lyrics, but I think he's also talented enough to come up with good melodies.
Yeah.
Which I think some of those guys are like. I have no doubt that Ozzy, even with Zach, probably came in sometimes and said, you know, I've got this idea for a melody. How about something like this? And he probably sang something. And Zach said, okay, I can write a riff around that. And then they wrote a song. So you could say, okay, well, that was really Ozzy that kind of wrote that song. Zach fleshed it out, but Ozzy had the idea.
Oh, yeah, totally.
So I'm sure that happened lots of times. So that, you know, I'm not trying to take away from Ozzy.
Well, his early songwriting credit that I see was with Kiss for I Was Made for Loving You.
Ah, okay.
And he worked with them over the years quite a bit.
Oh, yeah.
Quite a bit. Aerosmith, Bon Jovi, Joan Chitt and the Blackhearts, Aerosmith, Alice Cooper, Bonfire.
Mm-hmm.
God, we hadn't played any Bonfire on here before. Let's play some Bonfire, man.
Alright.
Let's play the song he helped write. This is called The Price of Loving You off the Point Blank record. Check it out. Here's one for you.
Here you
go. Love this.
Uh-huh.
Steve Vai, In My Dreams With You.
No shit.
With
My Dreams. Is that off of the one with Devin Townsend?
Yeah, the one with Devin Townsend.
No shit.
You'll like this one even better. Dream Theater.
Oh, that's right.
You Not
You
Me.
Not Me, right. That's right. Forgot about that. Yeah.
Now, had I seen that, I would have played that. Let's play it. What the hell?
Hit it.
Not impressed with that one.
That's what I mean. It's like, clearly the dude's versatile. He can write a good rock song, because we love the stuff he's written with the rock bands that we like, but he's gone off and written with these other dudes too. I mean, Ricky frickin' Martin. How do you go from writing a metal song with like Vi and then turn around and write something with Ricky Martin?
Right.
And pull it off enough for people to go, nice work, dude.
True.
That's pretty impressive.
Well, I'll tell you what, I'm gonna pick one more track that I really dig that's like... Probably no one's going to have this. Well, somebody's going to have it. I'm not the only schmuck. But this is, if you guys watched the remaking of Vince Neil, before he got back with the crew a few years back, he was working on a comeback and he got a nose job and got a makeover or whatever.
Oh, shit.
Yeah.
Tummy tuck.
Lost some, you know, he lost weight.
Oh, wow.
And got him like working out and stuff. He did a track called Promise Me. Really cool track. Let's play that. Other than that, going a little bit further, because this Wikipedia is pretty interesting, because it goes by year.
Yeah. Oh, totally.
So, the Vince Neil song, he was still in the hard rock community. Oh, God, he wrote some with Lindsay Lohan. He's wrote a bunch with Meatloaf, Paul Stanley, Sebastian Bach, Bon Jovi, still writing with them. 2007, Scorpions. Looks like he wrote almost three quarters of the track on the Humanity Hour.
Mm-hmm.
Katy Perry, Margaret Cho.
That didn't count as a song, I'm sure. She's
Tokyo Hotel. I've heard of that. I've seen their record. I don't know.
It's even written with Weezer. Damn.
Weezer, yeah. So, He lives out in Nashville. That's where a lot of these songwriter guys live now. Mm-hmm. So, anyway, that's an example of a guy. Oh, cool. That's almost time for another beat.
Oh, wait.
So that's an example of a guy that writes with other musicians. He's not in a band, but he's talented. He's got enough clout to say, hey, Paul Stanley, hey, Gene Simmons, you want to write a song together?
Mm-hmm.
If you don't, go fuck yourself.
And they went, oh, shit.
Yeah, so I tell you what, I'm really excited about this next beer, so I'm going to grab us another beer.
Okay.
I tell you what, is there a band that we've listed so far, Genghis, that you feel like playing a track?
Yeah, you know what? I could go for something off of the list here.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, sure. Why not? I mean, heck, we already listed some good bands, like we talked about AC/DC, of course, and we played them before, so don't worry, I'm not going there. But, you know, there's a lot of good stuff on here, including Deep Purple. Richie Blackmore and the boys have been given a big credit in that songwriting list.
Oh, I think we're going to go off the same record. Probably the same song.
Probably so.
What are you going to pick?
You might as well say
Perfect Strangers.
That's exactly right.
Let's play a little Perfect Strangers by Deep Purple. Here we go.
Oh,
God, that smells good, bro. Ooh, this is gonna be the shizzle.
Oh, yeah? Sweet.
Yes.
He's been excited about this one here.
Fuck yeah. Oh, God, you're gonna cum yourself.
Again?
You miss John, I know you do.
I try to act like
it. You clear your glass out.
I don't know, pretty much.
Damn, that smells good.
Really?
Oh, fuck.
And I'm not even the biggest blackberry fan, so I'm curious how this is going to be. Oh, wow, look at the color.
It's kind of purplish.
This could be pretty good. This ought to be something. Where'd you say you picked this up?
I don't remember where I got it. It's from British Columbia, though. You smell it?
Wow.
It smells like blackberry pie. That's
fucking good. Yeah, that does smell good.
Cheers.
Let's do it. Funky, but not bad.
Yeah. Smells better than it tastes. It doesn't taste too bad, though.
No. I think it's one of the another one of those
ooh,
ones.
God.
I think it's another one of those ones where, yeah, the more awesome. You drink it, the more you're like, oh, okay, I'm seeing it.
Now I understand.
Mm. Now it's hit me. Wow, that is good, actually.
That's different.
Pretty fucking good. Yeah, it is different, but yeah, that's coming in nice. Wow, okay. Well, heck, let's go ahead and just tell them what it is. This is from the Cannery Brewing Company. Mm. It is made, as you said, in Penticton, British Columbia. And this sucker here is the Cannery Brewing Blackberry Porter. Now, like I said, I'm not necessarily the hugest fan of blackberries, and my least favorite berry is the blueberry, because they're just tart as shit. But this actually is pretty good. They say on the side, you know, an exciting explosion of flavor. And it's true. At first, you're like, this is weird.
Yeah.
But then it kind of comes in and goes, don't forget the blackberry. And you go, oh, yeah. This is nice. It says on the side of here, 5 carefully chosen malted barleys are combined with 3 superior hop varieties to produce this traditional porter. Natural blackberry adds an exciting complexity to this easy sipping wonder. Yeah, dude, you can't stop remarking on the smell.
Oh, yeah.
The whole room's starting to smell like it. It smells fucking good.
Nice.
Like somebody just busted out some cobbler or some shit.
Yeah, in the very end of the palate tastes like cobbler, doesn't it? It's like I just had a piece of pie.
Yeah, because at first you're like, oh, beer. It's like an unusual taste. And all of a sudden you go, oh, shit. Somebody just put a whole bunch of blackberries in my mouth.
Yeah, no shit. That's nice.
It's nice. It's got a nice sweetness, but not so sweet that it's like sickly, you know, where
yeah.
it's like,
it's not
like
overbearing.
It's syrupy or something.
Not overbearing
yeah,
at all.
And that's where I think a lot of these craft brews make their mistake, is I think they go so overboard in trying to make sure that flavor hits you that they put too much, I don't know, syrup or whatever it is. Because I think it's rarely ever the fresh stuff. It's usually some sort of concentrate maybe or flavoring
sure.
that they probably add in during the
that's
process.
That's got to be fresh blackberries.
But this has got to be the shit. Yeah, just actual nothing but motherfucking blackberries, which is pretty amazing. But yeah, that shit's good. And it's, you know, a nice, what, 6.5 on the alcohol scale? We might as well go ahead and rate this real quick.
Sure, let's do it.
Let me go and pull up my notes over here. So what are we thinking here on the Cannery Brewing Blackberry Porter? What do you say for drinkability? Are
we doing taste or drinkability? Oh, I guess drinkability, yeah. 3.5?
I could go for that.
Smooth,
yeah, definitely.
For a porter.
That's true. And now, traditionally, porters are, so you drink them a little slower.
Yeah.
You're not just guzzling it down. It's just a nice sip. But yeah, this one's even easier to drink than the last one we had. What do you think for the alcohol, of course, is the 6.5.
About 2.5, 3.
Yeah, let's go ahead
and think this one's going to deserve a solid 3.
I'm thinking so for sure. Yeah, that nice, you know, usually when you say the word aftertaste, it doesn't have a good connotation.
No, it doesn't.
This has a nice aftertaste.
Totally.
It's like it kind of sits around in a nice way, like, aren't I tasty? Like you had some dessert. I really like that. So I think for taste, we're probably going to give a good 3.5 at least.
I'm down.
All right, let's do that. So that's going to give this guy an overall, I'm willing to give it an overall 3.5. Nice little blackberry porter. Well, fine. That's a fine, that's a good find you found there, Mr. Ragman.
Man, do what I can over
doing
there.
Your little travels up there in Canada.
I think this came, I don't know where this came from.
Oh, you didn't necessarily get it up there, huh?
I
it's
think
from
I got
there,
it in Arkansas.
Ah, okay. Because I know sometimes you make it up to Canada.
Oh, yeah. Actually, I need to get up there again. I hadn't done it, though.
This is getting nice. You know what I bet this goes really nicely with? With a nice cigar, actually.
Oh, yeah.
A little like after-dinner cigar, so you don't want a necessarily big, heavy... You know, you take your meatier, so to speak, heavier beers, and you have those with the main course, right? Especially with a nice piece of meat.
Yeah.
So you have some nice lamb or something, and you have a nice... kind of a strong beer that can stand up to the food. You always want to match the thing to the food, right?
Sure.
So there's a balance. So you've got that going, but when you go afterwards and you have your your beer, I mean your cigar at the end, and you're just chilling, it's nice to have a nice beer that stands up to it, but it gives you a little flavor too. So sort of a dessert beer is what I'd like to think of it as.
I'm thinking beer float too, a candidate.
I think you can make a really nice beer float out of this.
Oh, fuck yeah.
Nice. We'll send an email to Turtlehead.
Yeah, definitely.
I know he can make something out of this. He'll probably make like a cobbler float.
I was going to say like a blackberry cheesecake.
Or maybe something. I could see him doing something, and I don't want to give him ideas.
How fucked up would that be?
I'm thinking something with maybe kind of a, because I've seen, I think it's Ben and Jerry's, every now and then we'll have something like a peach cobbler, because I think there's a Willie Nelson, because they got celebrities that endorse these different ones. Mm-hmm. Willie Nelson's got one that's like a peach cobbler that literally has crust from a cobbler in there as part of it. That would go beautifully with the blackberries.
Oh, that's what I was saying. Something like that, or like a strawberry cheesecake.
Or like a little shortbread or some cheesecake kind of crust. Oh, and that graham cracker. Graham cracker would go.
That's the ticket.
Mark my words. He'll do something like that. It's going to be the shit.
Okay, I found something else here.
Yeah. Back in our topic of
John
songwriting.
John Paul, George, and Ringo. That's not, no. Well, I'll tell you what. I'm not even going to worry about this. We know good bands. Let's think about Van Halen for a second. You brought up Van Halen a little bit ago.
Uh-huh.
You had two incarnations.
Uh-huh.
So there was a driving force behind the writing of Van Halen. Same thing with AC/DC. You had two vocalists.
Right.
And if you think about it, if you listen to the Bon Scott stuff, that was different than the stuff from Brian Johnson. Uh-huh. Not a whole lot. Not totally. You knew it was AC/DC, either band.
And I think that the part that was similar between the two was Angus Young.
Right.
Is what I would think.
Van Halen, same thing.
Right.
So you had different styles. You had the more partier, happy-go-lucky lyric style of David Lee Roth. And then with Sammy, you had some of the same thing, but more
a little more sophisticated. Yeah, a little more sophisticated, I think.
And he had more range as a vocalist.
He was a musician.
Yeah.
Which Roth, for all of his intrigue and as fun as he is to watch and listen to, I don't think he would even ever claim he was a musician. Right. I think he was just having fun.
And a lot of people still prefer Dave over Sammy.
That's understandable. Understandable. If only for nostalgia's sake.
Sure.
You grew up with him.
They're about to play Australia.
Yeah, I heard they're actually working on a new album.
Yeah, heard that too.
So that'll be interesting. I wonder what that'll be. I mean, the first
if hell's
new
gonna
tune.
Freeze over this year, that album may come out.
Hey, well, you know, the rapture happens this weekend, right?
That's what I hear.
That's what I'm hearing.
Oh, just to talk about that for a second.
Sure, why not?
I heard homeboy that like dreamt this up. He's taking $130 donations from people for his people to take care of their pets. If they go to heaven during the
That's
seriously.
See, that's using your head. It's like, you know what? I'm probably going to get left behind because I'm a piece of shit.
I'm a
you,
good person.
You,
though,
you're a great person, though.
So give me $130.
And wouldn't
bucks.
A great person worry about their pets? I'll take care of them for you. It's like, thanks, bro. That's beautiful.
I wonder if I'm guessing it's non-refundable.
Yeah. I'm thinking, sure.
I actually heard that John had given a lot of the money he had gotten on his signing bonus from Aerosmith to this guy.
To take care of his various affairs.
Yes.
It's very good.
Yeah, he had a lot of stuff going on. McCheese, from what I heard, was livid.
Well, because he thought a lot of that money was going to him.
Yeah, no shit.
He's so, like that. He's got his own sort of agenda.
Yeah.
He seems like he's helping people. But he's got kind of a Gloria Allred thing going. It's like, yeah, I'm just here to protect my client. It's like, right, the money bag. That's what you're protecting.
Well, I tell you what, one we haven't talked about, Ryan James Dio.
Oh, yeah.
We talked about Sabbath a little bit ago with Ozzy. Mm-hmm. And then we went on to our Ozzy Zac thing.
Mm-hmm.
But look at Dio. He's a primary songwriter. But when he was in Sabbath, he met another guy that was a primary songwriter.
Oh. No, they didn't really knock heads, did they, in that?
Not so much.
Did they meld together pretty well?
They did for the two records, and I think that they had problems over the sound of Live Evil, the Black Sabbath record.
Really? Okay.
And during the production of that, Ronnie got pissed. And so he ended up leaving the band due to a big fight over that.
Interesting, okay.
So he leaves, he does Dio, and then he goes back.
Uh-huh.
They start touring, everybody's happy, and then they start talking about doing a couple one-off gigs with Ozzy. He says, go fuck yourself.
I'm out of here.
Yeah. So he leaves again.
Fair enough.
And then they get back together years later. By the way, we were talking about this a little bit earlier. It's the one-year anniversary of Dio's passing.
Today, I think, right?
This week.
This week, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. So let's play a classic Dio tune.
You bet.
Golly, there's so many great ones.
I know.
It's, you got anything at the top of your head or no?
No, you know, because I've got songs I like, but I feel pressured to come up with like one of the best ones, one of the high profile ones.
Let's play something we always say.
Okay.
Here's to you. We'll deal for you. Here's to you.
Nice.
Here's to you!
Raise a glass to him. What the hell? Here's to you, my friend. Finishing off a pretty nice Blackberry Porter.
Yeah.
I have to admit, that's pretty good.
Well, I'll tell you what, it's I think we've exasperated the topic. Maybe not. We could have went deeper. We didn't hit the newer bands like I promised, but sorry. We'll pick this up
on
later.
We'll revisit it, I guess.
Yeah, we'll reminisce about it. Do what we gotta do.
Okay.
So anyway. Let's move on to our classic of the show.
Nice.
Tell you what, I got a cool classic. Yeah. Let's play something from Zebra.
Nice.
And this is a song that's been played a billion times, but I fucking love this song.
Who's behind the door?
Fuck yeah. That is cool.
That's a little Zebra, man.
Fuck yeah.
Time.
That is a great fucking song. That song never gets fucking old, don't you?
No, it doesn't. No, it doesn't. It's a one of those classics that stands the test of time, my friend.
Well, see, that's the other thing. We often think of, and this is one maybe my party thought about it all, we often think of a lot of classic team-ups, classic songwriting. We all often think of it as, well, it's like this overall sort of legacy, you know. It's like, you know, when you're going to mention a classic team, you're going to think Lennon and McCartney, right?
Sure.
But part of what reason you think of it is the depth of material. I mean, there's so many songs they wrote, so you go, oh, well, they must have been a great team, they wrote so many.
Sure.
But sometimes you could say, you know, hey, Zebra, that one song, we're still thinking about that song, and every time you hear it, it's still fucking great, right? It hasn't lost any of its interest. So that's great songwriting. It may have only been one song they ever wrote, mm-hmm. but they hit the fucking mark. They hit the bullseye on that
totally.
One song. So for that song, at least, great songwriting.
Totally.
Now, they're not going to make any top 100 lists, and they're not going to be, like, in the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, probably.
No.
But you know what? That's great fucking songwriting.
I tell you what, it's one of my top 100 songs.
It's great songwriting. No shit.
Yeah, I love that song. Sweet. I really do.
We'll have to do a
special. I can't say I love a lot of their other stuff, but I love that song.
We'll have to do a segment sometime, another episode, where maybe a variation on the Desert Island thing, where people say if you'd only take 5 albums.
Oh, that'd be sweet, yeah.
And what we'll do, though, is a Desert Island mixtape.
Oh,
I'm only going to take one mixtape, say 20, 21 songs, and these are the songs that are going to go on my mixtape. Stuck on my desert island.
We'll wear
that way it can be anything.
We'll wear swimming trunks. We'll get some sand brought into the studio.
Dude,
some sun lamps, a little
umbrella.
We'll
just knock this shit down. Yeah, we'll knock out that wall there and make the...
For sure.
That shit open up to the sky.
I like it. And they're actually digging out a man-made lake behind the studios here. Maybe we could do a show outside by the lake.
That sounds like a good idea.
That's cool.
We'll bring in a bunch of shit. Arnold can bring in his Hummer.
And if Arnold's still with us, I think we'll be good, because he's offered to work for free. And with John's salary that we were paying him, we have extra money. So
that's why I'm saving money on that.
Exactly. So I'll tell you what, I'm going to get on with my pick of the week. My pick of the week is from the new Mr. Big record.
Nice.
What If. It's so good to have these guys back.
Oh, yeah. That's a great album.
What a good, solid record this thing is.
Fuck yeah.
So, tell you what, I'm really kind of digging the track As Far As I Can See. So let's check that out. Really good return from the band. Not a letdown. Just overall, a great record by the band. Great return.
Yeah, pretty much
didn't
every
skip a beat.
Every song on there came out pretty good, right? I mean, it's obvious. I'm not saying the whole album's a classic,
not
but I mean,
everything's great. But
when a band that's been gone for 10-something years to come back and have that many great songs on one album is pretty amazing, right?
It's a solid return.
Fuck yeah, you gotta love
for
that
for sure. Solid return. So what about you, Genghis? You got a pick of the week?
Yeah. I've been listening to a new band that I'm really digging the shit out of called Across the Sea. And in fact, I should have there's probably a review up on the site as you're hearing this podcast. And I've got a few new albums that I'm really digging. And this band has got a real nice, kind of an In Flamesy sound, I guess. But that kind of, and by that I mean that melodic death metal sort of sound. They still got the clean vocals mixed with some guttural vocals.
and just some amazing fucking guitar work, some nice real heavy shit. Keyboards get a little cheesy every now and then, like they just like if you just spent a little extra money on a good patch, you know, to get a nice sound on the keyboard. Yeah. Some kind of a little Casio keyboardy sounds on some of those tracks, but
sure,
that'll get refined maybe as new albums come out. But this song I'm really digging is called Descent and Discovery off the album Before the Night Takes Us by the group Across the Sun. Check this out.
There are moments when the fall remains, created by something distant emanating our soul. Picking it to assume our foundation, slowly muting bits of me until there's nothing left. An overwhelming sense of empty, leaving behind only fractions of a man whose life force flourish within the fire beneath this chest. Now stricken with spaces,
yeah, aren't they great?
Oh, dude, they're awesome.
I love finding a new band where you're just like, holy fuck, where did they come from? And they're just awesome.
Yeah, no shit. Where do they grow these fucking people?
Where did they grow you?
Yeah, no shit. Well, anyway, guys, we want to thank you for joining us once again. Thanks for coming back and checking out the RightToRock.com and the Genghis and Ragman show. We hope you enjoy the interview coming your way here. When we give you two big
horns.
All right, this is Mark Colombo from Free Reign, and you listen to Genghis and the Ragman, and horns up.
So we want to thank you for coming on the show. You guys put out a record here about a year or so ago, and now you have a new single. which is really, really good, man. Very strong, called One Step Away. How the band came together, and if you guys don't know, I guess I said it, we have part of the Dallas Cowboys. A couple guys from the Cowboys, actually there were three of you, and then Corey went to Miami, so we got some football players playing metal. So Mark, kind of tell us how that came together.
Well, it started with me and Corey. Corey played drums, and I played in a few bands before I got here to Dallas, and we just started writing songs together, and it was, you know, basically just us messing around for a few years, and Leonard picked up the bass and he joined the band, and then we played some, you know, some pretty cool shows around the Dallas area as a three piece, and then Justin, our guitarist, joined the band, and that's when it kind of took off, because, you know, he's a heck of a player and he pushed us all to be better, and we've been doing some really good things lately, and we're really excited for everyone to hear a full length coming out April 19th.
Sweet, sweet. Well, if you were to describe the band's sound, how would you kind of describe it?
That's a good question. It's definitely unique. I'm like a thrash metal fan. Justin's more of a nu metal, you know, Korn, you know, that type of stuff. I would say it's a cross between like a Killswitch Engage, Metallica, and like a Breaking Benjamin. I know it's a weird mix, but it's kind of good that you can't really categorize our sound too much.
Well, that's what I was going to say. I was going to say you guys have a heavy edge to you, but you also kind of could be looped in with some of those kind of buzz bands.
Yeah, we try to do like hard rock, you know. Metal's where we thrive at. You know, if you listen to the album, it's pretty heavy from start to finish, but you know, we can change it up and do it, you know, hard rock when need be. We all grew up with those, you know, type of songs, and yeah, I think it makes for a good mix on a CD to be able to show our diversity a little bit.
Well, interesting thing you mentioned about Leonard. Did he play bass before he joined the group, or did he just pick it up and say, "Man, I got to be a part of this"?
Yeah, he just picked it up. It's a credit to him because he, you know, he got with the guitarist and has been playing his whole entire life, and they just went at it for, I mean, months and getting him up to speed. And he learned, I mean, he literally learned the bass guitar at a high level playing. I mean, heavy metal is probably the hardest genre to play bass, especially with the, you know, the stuff that Justin's writing. And he picked it up, God, in about less than a year, and it was just amazing to see him play now. It's, and remember back when, it's just really cool. Credit to him.
Well, the one cool thing about you guys is Justin's guitar player, he's kind of a ripper, man, which kind of adds to that, you know, the vibe of what you guys are doing, which, you know, can loop you in with some other kind of bands. He's got a really nice little style of guitar playing he does. Where did you guys know him for a long time, or how did he...
He grew up with Leonard out here in Texas, West Texas, at Wortham, Texas, out in the middle of nowhere. I mean, population 1,000. And they both grew up together, and they played football in high school together, and, you know, Justin was in some really good bands in the Texas area, you know, when Leonard was doing his football thing, and he just happened to not be in a band at the time, and I listened to his music. You know, Leonard, a few years before Free Reign was even formed, gave me, you know, his buddy Justin's band. They were called Black Picket Fence, and they were unbelievable. One of those bands that never made it, but, you know, you wonder why, because they just had everything. they're more of a hard rock type band, and Justin wasn't really funny. And as soon as I heard that, I tried to steal him. I'm like, Justin, you got to come join our band, and he was up.
That's all. How did you guys? Can you say what label the new record's coming out? I guess you can because it's coming out here shortly.
Yeah, we last year on the 5th with Riot Entertainment, we signed a record deal. We parted with them on good terms. It was just, you know, it's kind of like a one-time, one-record deal thing. And we decided to create our own record label and just do everything ourselves. I think it's pretty much, I think, where music is going these days. If you can do it yourself, you're better off doing it. So it wasn't easy. You know, it's difficult setting that stuff up. And, you know, I got a real crash course in, you know, how to produce an album, how to market it, how to, you know, the publicity part of things, the artwork and everything. It was a lot of work, but, you know, better off for it, and now we got our, you know, our full length coming out, so most of the work's done.
So, talking about this new record coming out, once it's out, I guess you got a while before. When's training camp start?
Training camp is late July.
Oh, okay, so you guys got a little bit of time once the record's out to do a little bit of touring or something. Are you guys gonna be playing some dates?
Yeah, we do like select shows. Probably, it's really hard to get to the top of football, even. You know, now we got a little bit of flexibility, but usually, you know, we have mini camps, we have practices, and it's really tough to get out there and get a back-to-back dates, you know, kind of like you have to do on touring. Mm-hmm. But, yeah, we just kind of select our shows and try and, through our website, freeranmusic.com, you can go there and kind of see what we're up to, and, you know, we try and get, you know, to most of our fans and do probably, you know, 4, 5, 6 shows. Big shows, and that's what we're looking to do this offseason.
Well, I thought it was pretty cool. I think I was watching Monday Night Football, or it could have been Sunday Night Football one night, and they mentioned your band, and I just instantly went to the computer and looked you guys up. I said, "Oh, dude, this is awesome!" And then I was contacted and got a promo and reviewed the record, and I was like, "Oh, dude, this is a win-win. This is so awesome." It sounds like the NFL's kind of embraced it a little bit in that. You know, at least are letting the networks talk about it. I don't know if that's fueled by the networks or if it's fueled by the NFL.
Yeah, I think we're unique. I don't think at first people are like, what is on? You know, 3 Dallas Cowboys playing heavy metal. It's just, it's so different, and it hasn't been really tried before because of the amount of time you have to put into it.
Mm-hmm.
And we just went for it, and it ended up working out. You know, we did a lot of good things last year, and, you know, this album that's coming out is a huge step above what we put out last year that you guys reviewed, and can't wait for you guys to review the new one.
Oh, I can't wait to hear it. How many tracks do you have on there?
It's 8 tracks, and it's kick-ass. And if you like One Step Away, you're like, yeah, it's got a little bit more of a heavier vibe, but we got some really good mix of songs in there.
Is One Step Away going to be included on the new record?
Oh, yeah. Yep, that'll be song number 3.
What kind of reception have you guys gotten to the new track? Have you gotten any airplay, I guess, at least around Dallas, or are you getting any?
Yeah, we've gotten airplay. We were actually on Octane on Sirius Radio. That was pretty cool. That was always been a dream of mine to get a song played on Octane. So it was on rotation for a little bit. But it's kind of, you know, One Step Away is more of a hard rock song. We're in the heavy metal genre, so a lot of people right now are waiting for our full length to come out to hear the full assault pretty much. So.
Well, that's what's going to say.
One Step Away is doing pretty good.
Well, I was going to say that would be perfect on Octane and get some exposure, you know.
Yep, it's a good station, and they were really good to us.
Oh man, that's awesome. Well, we're going to wrap up here pretty quick, but let me ask you this: is this something you guys are in for the long haul after your careers are over, or just kind of a fun project?
Now, that's the plan, and I think, you know, our big handicap right now is not being able to get out there and tour, kind of like you were talking about. When football eventually comes to an end, I think this is going to be something where we can get out on the road a little bit more and people can hear our music live. And, you know, we love to play live, and that's kind of been the one thing we haven't been able to do. We haven't been able to take that next step because people can't get out in front of us and see us all the time. But just stay tuned. There's going to be some good things coming down the road.
Has it been more difficult for you guys with Corey? I guess he's been he was on Miami now. Does he still live in Dallas with you guys?
He does. Yeah, that's it. It hasn't really changed anything just because he comes back here in the off season. So, you know, in all of our work we do in the off season. So luckily he decided to make Texas his home after being here for 5 years.
I got to give, I don't know Corey at all. We just met, but I got to give Corey a hard time for not plugging your band more when he was on the reality show there on VH1, the Rock and Roll Fantasy Camp.
Oh, I'll have to give him some crap for that. Yeah, I don't. I think he did a good. His band did a good job. But
oh yeah,
he's more of the most social guy in our band, so that's unacceptable. So I'll talk to him about that.
Well, dude, he should have had a Free Reign T-shirt on in every segment.
Yeah, he's probably just concentrating on, you know, being on TV for the first time. So,
oh yeah.
Well, I guess we'll give him a little pass.
Oh, there you go. Well, a guilty pleasure here. I have to ask you before I let you go here. What's the next Cowboys season looking like?
Well, it's good. I think everyone's a little bit angry of how we finished last year. We finished good last year. I mean, how we started last year. So, I think we're going to come back. Everybody's working really hard right now, and we're going to come back strong this year.
What's Romo's health like?
He's fine. Perfect.
He's back and ready to go, huh?
Yep, he's ready to rock.
Excellent. Well, Mark, before we let you go, is there anything you'd like to let the fans know?
No, just look forward to our album coming out April 19th. I think you guys are going to really dig it. Go to our website, freerainmusic.com, for everything, from merchandise to CD bundles. We're going to have it all coming up here in the next week or so, so just stay tuned.
Oh, one more question. I lied. videos. Right. Are you guys going to have any videos for the new record?
We completed our One Step Away video. We did it a couple weeks back, and it's really kick-ass. And it's going to be pretty much wrapped up. I think right now they're editing. It's going to be wrapped up, I think, here in the next few days. So look for that on our website too. That's going to be launched here, you know, sometime probably late next week. So we're really excited to see that, and now people can start putting faces with the music.
Perfect, man. Well, you may scare the shit out of them because these are some big guys. If you see, you don't want
to. Yeah, we have some pyrotechnics and, you know, at a haunted house. It's pretty badass.
Yeah. Well, you're talking a bunch of linemen up there on stage, man. I don't, like you said, I don't think that's ever been done. The closest thing is maybe Jericho fronting Fozzy, ex wrestler. He's pretty
that's
built
right,
up, too,
yep.
I guess.
Yep.
Well, Mark, thank you for coming on the RightToRock.com and the Genghis and Ragman show. It's been an honor to talk to you, and we look forward to talking to you further in the future, man.
All right. Thank you very much for having me.
Ragman. And you've been listening to the Right to Rock podcast, and we appreciate you listening, and we want to give a big thank you to Tracy G, who is the third unofficial member of the group. We appreciate all of his work, especially the Broken Man song, which is the theme song to the Right to Rock podcast.
And also, we're going to give high props to our boys in Sonic X. Adam and Joseph have lent us 13 to finish the show, so what you're listening to right now is 13 by Sonic X. So check them out. And keep checking us out. And horns up.